The next case is 04403, William Young, Executor versus Cincinnati Insurance Company. Mr. Henneman.
If it please the court, my name is Henry Henneman. I'm with the firm of Davis & Young in Cleveland, Ohio, and I represent the appellant in this matter. I wonder if I could just impose a few seconds to mention to you that Mr. Grant Goodman, counsel for the appellee in this matter, came over to me this morning and said, thank you for appealing this case because I've got a chance for the first time to see this beautiful courtroom, and I second that.
I wonder if his client agrees with you.
It's very impressive, and I mean that sincerely. The case that we have this morning is a case that arises out of an automobile accident that occurred on December 18, 2000 in Akron, Ohio. I'm sorry, in Solon, Ohio. The plaintiff's decedent died in the accident as a result of injuries sustained in the accident, and he is also the administrator of the estate. The plaintiff settled with the tortfeasors for $500,000 under a single limit policy. Probate court approved the settlement and distributed all the money to Mr. Young, the surviving spouse. This case involves a claim for wrongful death damages brought by the Lapius family for the death of the woman that was killed, Margaret Young, who happened to be the mother and grandmother of the plaintiffs in this case. They are making a claim which is often referred to as a Sexton Moore type claim, where they're claiming for wrongful death damages for a decedent who was not an insured under the policy. However, I'd like to point out that the policy was initially issued by Motorist Mutual to the Lapius family on October 1 of 1993, and the policy at all times material hereto did have an exclusion that you could not recover damages unless the party who suffered the bodily injury from which those damages rise wasn't insured under the policy. That language was in the policy at that time. However, as this court knows, pursuant to Moore and Sexton, the decisions in those cases, the exclusion was not considered sanctioned. The Motorist Mutual policy was a six-month policy from its inception date, which was, as I mentioned, October 1, 1993, and had a definite six-month term that was renewed continuously up to the time of the accident. And as I mentioned, the policy had in it the exclusionary language regarding Moore Sexton type cases. The accident occurred on December 18, 1990, or 2000. However, the policy that they had and the law surrounding that policy changed by virtue of Senate Bill 267. Senate Bill 267 amended 393718 for uninsured motorist coverage and allowed an exclusion to be contained in the policy limiting recovery only to damages arising out of bodily injury to an insured under that policy. As mentioned, the mother in this case was not an insured. Senate Bill 267 further amended 393731A and added a paragraph to that statute under paragraph E. The language in the statute, let me back up a little bit, but the law at the time, prior to Senate Bill 267, made it a mandatory two-year policy period that nobody could change the policy without consent of the other to that policy for 2 years. The accident, or the Senate Bill 267, became effective on September 21 of 2000. The law went into effect in 2000. The policy, though it was not part of that two-year renewal, guarantee renewal policy period under 39-37-31, the policy also had a termination date or a renewal date of 6 months, which was contained in the policy itself. When Senate Bill 261 became effective in September of 2000, though the two-year guarantee period had not lapsed yet or had not reached a renewal point, there nevertheless was the six-month renewal that was available through the policy itself. And the policy was, in fact, renewed on October 1, 2000. This was a renewal of the policy within the terms of the policy contract, not by virtue of 39-37-31. And as I mentioned, the amendments to Senate Bill 261 allowed a restriction of coverage for the death of a person who was not insured under the policy, and also allowed a renewal of the policy within the term of the two-year period. The new clause in the statute, 39-37-31E, capital letter E, is a new paragraph. And that became effective when 267 became effective on September 21, 2000. It states, "Nothing in this section shall prohibit an insurer from incorporating into a policy any changes that are permitted or required by this section or other sections of the revised code at the beginning of any policy period within the two-year policy period set forth in Division A of this section." I would like to point out that Division A of that section was amended at the same time Senate Bill 267 went into play, and the phrase in that statute that there must be a two-year guaranteed renewal policy period was changed to the fact that within 2 years or within a two-year period, you must renew it at policy times.
So what does that mean?
It's in the brief, quoted in the brief, and it's part of this Ohio General Assembly printout of the changes in the statute, and it's paragraph 39-37-31E.
Well, that simply permits the insurance carrier to adopt statutory changes into its policy during the two-year period.
During the two-year period,
is that your
even
point?
Though it's not one of those guaranteed periods.
Correct, correct. Okay. And that's your point under E.
Under
policy could incorporate the current statutory changes which came about from 267.
That's right. And I submit to this court that when the legislature made that change of Senate Bill 267, it really superseded 39-37-31A
right.
as it was listed in the statute.
Okay. Now, the other question I have is, how does our decision in Ross impact the statute?
In the Ross case, in Ross versus Farmers,
didn't we hold that in Ross, statutory amendments couldn't affect rights under a pre-existing contract? And then a later statutory change seems to come out and say in 267, you can incorporate them. So isn't there a...
Ross merely said that the law at the time of the contract, entering into the contract or a renewal of a contract,
yes,
the law that's on the books at that time is the law that controls that contract.
Yes.
And we maintain that the position of Motorist Mutual is compatible with that. Because by taking the statute as it exists at the time of the renewal on October 1 of 2000, at that time we had 39-37-31E on the books along with the change of paragraph A.
Okay.
The opposition, anticipating the opposition, is that they maintain that nobody can make a change to 39, 37, 31E, or such as E, by virtue of the fact that they apparently feel they've gained some vested rights by virtue of that two-year period. And this was within that two-year period that we were making this change by virtue of the change in the law. We maintain, however, that there were no vested rights that anybody received as a result of any action taken before 31E became the law. And if so, the law enunciated in Wolf versus Wolf is enunciated based upon the decision reached in that case by an interpretation of the court of that statute. And if there's any impingement upon anything that that the court or that the insurance company did, or by that statute with respect to the renewal of that statute and the binding effect of that statute, that was something that was a result of this court's interpretation of Wolf at the time they rendered it. When we now have the outgrowth of 267 being the result of that decision, I'd like to submit to the court also that the Wolf decision was decided in March of 2000, and September 21 of 2000 is when the legislature came out with this statute, which directly affects the impact of the Wolf decision. I believe that the actions taken by Motorist Mutual in this case are not impinging upon the rights of any contract, and I believe that they are also not retroactive in application of the effect of the law itself, but it does support the fact that you can make changes now. I'd like to also just submit some thoughts is the fact that it makes sense in the sense that we still are imposing on the public or on the insurance industry the guaranteeing of the policy period. But to deprive them of the law that is on the books that everybody else can enjoy, they are deprived of having that for 2 years. So if you have them have the changes in the law go into the policy and still impose the two-year mandatory renewal, just allowing you yearly or whenever you renew, if it's a 6 month policy, it's every 6 months, you update your contract to what the law shows and what everybody else in the state of Ohio is enjoying.
Counsel, so then this really hinges upon how often you pay your insurance contract. If
that's
you're
right,
renewed
yeah.
every 6 months, every year, if this was a 1 year
this,
payment
no,
period
this
instead
month.
Of a 6 month, they would be. You wouldn't have had that provision in for them to even be considered here. It's only because of the payment period that triggers the inclusion of the changes that are mandated by Senate Bill 267.
That's right. So when they renewed their policy, they renewed the policy with the new changes in the law.
So every renewal period, the tendering of a check or payment by the insureds, in essence, triggers a new policy.
That's right.
Okay. So mm-hmm. how does the two-year policy period that is referenced in 3937, how does that come into play here? What are they talking about then in situations such as this where a policy is in essence renewed every 2 years or every 6 months because of the exchange of the dollar for the protection or coverage? How does the two-year period figure into that?
The statute still stays the same. 39, 37, 31A remains the same other than that one word where they said this is not a two-year policy period. This is just a two-year period within which the parties can't change the terms of the contract without consent, but the policy remains in effect. So you have the insurance. And the people who are parties to that contract would have the benefit of the law that exists at that time, whether it's pro or con, whether it's a restriction or whether it's an expansion of coverage. Otherwise, they have to wait 2 years. Because the way the law is before 267, nobody could make any changes for 2 years, period, and that the policy period commenced every 2 years. It was a new statute or a new policy period that they were imposing on the public. And what I maintain is that it just shows that if you think it through, those people are not getting the benefit that the law provides that other people that are not under that two-year obligation have.
Who you say those people aren't getting the benefit?
Pardon? Other people who have motor vehicle liability policies with other insurance carriers
are getting the benefit of not having insurance coverage. You call that a benefit?
No, they still have. The other laws still apply.
Well, you're taking away coverage here rather than extending it. So I'm mystified that you call that
a benefit. Well, if the legislature allows restrictions in the policy, the company gets the benefit of it. If the legislature...
But you refer to people getting the benefit. The companies get the benefit in this case. What, right?
Yeah.
They're people too, yeah. I suppose.
Because by virtue of 3937.18, 267 said that the exclusion in that policy that the person, in order to get damages for the injury and death of a person, that person has to be uninsured.
So your argument is that the only thing that's 2 years guaranteed now is that they can't take the policy away from you over a 2 year period.
That's the way it was before, too, except you couldn't take advantage of any changes.
If they can get the legislature to do it, they can gut it for you, but they can't take it away.
The court has, an example is that they did away with the exclusion that a vehicle furnished for your regular and frequent use cannot be the uninsured motor vehicle. That was held that at one time that exclusion was valid. The legislature changed that in 267, as a matter of fact. Part of 267 was that you couldn't put that exclusion in the policy. You could have the other owned vehicle exclusion, but not the vehicle furnished for your regular and frequent use. Too many people have jobs where they're driving cars regularly, and so they should have the benefit of it. So that would be an example. When that change came in, then somebody who had a policy at that period of time would have been able to use the benefit of that change. But if they were locked into 2 years before they could use it and get an accident during that period of time, they would be out of luck. I could see your point that probably it benefits the insurer more than the insured, because the statute comes up with the exclusions that are available and whether they are sanctioned. So I don't know how many would be how many examples would exist with respect to the other way around, but that one I just mentioned is one.
Do we have to overrule Ross and Wolf to rule in your favor?
No, I think Ross stands on its own.
What about Wolf?
Wolf, I think it's already been modified by paragraph E, because Wolf says you can't it's got to be just this policy for 2 years. And now E says any policy renewal allows the company allows the insurance to take advantage of new changes. You don't have to wait 2 full years in a vacuum. You get the benefit of the law that exists every time your policy is renewed. 6 months, be it 1 month, be it 6 months, or be it a year,
so
or 2 years.
If you pay quarterly, that's a renewal too?
Pardon?
If you pay quarterly, that's a renewal?
No, I think it's when the policy is renewed. Even those policies where you have quarterly payments, they still are term policies. In many instances, I imagine there's something out there that I missed. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Hendeman.
Did I have enough time for a rebuttal? 2 minutes, three
well,
minutes?
You used over 3 minutes over your time, but you have 30 seconds.
Okay,
Mr. Goodman.
Thank you. Good morning. I would like to reserve 5 of my 15 minutes for my amicus counsel, if that's appropriate.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. This case is not one of first impression. Every time a new UM statute comes out, as it has been recently, it's getting more restrictive for the coverages available for the policyholders. The insurers look to grab as many of the benefits under the new statute as possible and shove them into existing policies. There are very clear standards and guidelines that this state and its insurers must follow when modifying existing contracts. Article 2, Section 28 of our Constitution addresses this exact issue and confirms that there's no way that the General Assembly can have the power to pass laws impairing the rights of contracts that are already existing and out there. Using this constitutional support, this court is dead on in addressing the Ross decision.
The two-year period that's at issue here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that statutorily created, that right, that two-year renewal right? That's not usually in the insurance policies. That's a statutorily created right.
Under Wolf, this
court. So why is this an impairment of contract? It's not a contract issue that gives you that two-year right. It's a statutory issue that gives you that two-year right. And now the statute changed. Can you address that?
Absolutely. We believe that all of these arguments that my humble counsel have made are appropriate and effective after a certain day and time. The statute can absolutely change prior statutes, can reinterpret the law, and can overturn and address what this court has done. When 267 was announced, it addressed these very issues. It didn't like the fact that this court provided a two-year ironclad guarantee period, so it threw it out the window. It said, you still have the ironclad guarantee periods, but you, insurance company, can define by your policy how short those are, quarterly, 6 months, annually. You still can't change the terms absent an agreement between the parties in that time period, but on each of the new chunks or windows, you can incorporate things that have happened during that protected period. This court, through its Wolf decision, said, hey, it's a two-year period. Now the insurance companies get whatever they want, but now they want to apply that backwards. Because this new statute, 267, came about during the ironclad two-year period, they simply want to interrupt that protected period. They didn't want to wait until the end.
But you do agree that that two-year period is a statutorily granted right, not a contract right.
Correct.
It exists only because of the statute.
Absolutely correct.
Now, counsel, maybe I'm not, probably not following your argument, but if an accident occurred for more than 2 years down the road from the enactment of that statute, and you agree that the statute said going forward we aren't going to have the statutory two-year protection?
Correct.
Right. So is part of your argument that this occurrence is within the 2 years that was locked in for this insured, but had these facts occurred more than 2 years after the enactment of this statute, then the time period of protection of existing policy coverages would be whatever the insurance company made it from that point on.
You are absolutely correct, Your Honor.
So we're really only arguing here, and our holding would only affect
two cases in the state of Ohio.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That are within that you know about, at least.
Well, these are all old cases because upon the advent of 267,
disappears. Once you're 2 years down the road from the effective date of 267.
This
dispute, you concede, would not be alive.
Only for those folks whose insurance policies began the day before 267. They would still have the 2 years. There aren't many. I mean, we know of two cases. This is 05. This is stuff back in 99 and 00. The Sloan case, Allstate and Sloan, out of, I believe, the Stark County Court of Appeals, and this one are the only two cases in the state of Ohio that have this very unique fact pattern, $200,000.
This would fail to meet our normal test for whether or not
this court,
we should even be looking at this.
Initially declined to hear the case, Your Honor, and reversed itself on a motion for reconsideration. So, yeah, I believe there are two insurance policies in the entire state of Ohio that will be affected here. Each one has a $100,000 policy. Our stipulated damage in this case are $75,000. In Sloan, they're under $100,000. The impact of this court's decision could be detrimental. If we follow Motorist Mutual's position, I do believe that Wolf has to be overturned. Plain and simple. I believe that three of the judges sitting on the current panel were in the majority in Wolf. I believe that revised code 1.58 needs to be disregarded. I believe that the Ohio Constitution needs to be explained around, and that Ross needs to be significantly modified in order to achieve this result to help two insurance companies on two claims. The guarantee period under the two-year guarantee period forces us to look at the beginning of that under the Ross decision to determine the statutory law in effect at that time. And at that time, these Sexton Moore claims were viable. They're no longer viable. That's fine. The insurance companies have been able to do away with them by including appropriate language in their policies. That's fine. These claims no longer exist. This court doesn't need to radically alter stare decisis, radically alter the foundation of our laws to assist in two small claims. Ross obligates mandates that the law in effect at the beginning of that two-year period remains binding throughout. This occurred, 267 occurred 1 year in there. Those permissible changes that occurred within that period are simply held in abeyance. They're not disregarded. My clients signed up for their insurance policy, and at that time, were given a two-year guarantee period. The answer to Mr. Henneman's question, he indicated, well, we're stuck with this. We're absolutely stuck for 2 years. We can't take advantage of the new permissible exclusions that we can rely upon in these policies, and that's not true. They could have sent their insurer a letter explaining that the laws have changed, we're going to take coverage away from you, and here's a rebate. Here's a $5 rebate. They would then get the agreement between the parties, and the Wolf two-year period wouldn't apply. They
counsel,
didn't even have
what,
to pay them.
Counsel, what effect, if any, is that this policy was renewed every 6 months by payment? What effect does this have on your thought process here?
Back as it existed before 267, it had no effect because the Wolf decision said, we don't care how often the insurer says it's renewed. You have a two-year chunk, syllabus holding, plain and simple. 267 throws it out the window, and now your argument.
Well, I know the 267 does subsequent to, but you're maintaining still that even though you have the guaranteed non-change, for the non-consensual alteration, I should say, in Wolf, there's no impact whatsoever on a six-month payment period. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. The insurer's unilateral dictation of however short the policy period is, while Wolf was in effect and why 261 was in effect, had absolutely no impact on this. It has everything to do with 267, and that's why this is no longer a problem.
Okay.
This court's holding in this case will not provide guidance for insureds, insurers, will not assist any future claimants or protect any interests whatsoever. The Gladys decision addresses how stare decisis is handled, and the test provided therein is simply not applicable here at all. This court would have to take extraordinary leaps and bounds to alter Supreme Court case law when it just doesn't need to do it. The plain syllabus holdings in Ross allow this court to adhere to the two-year guarantee period that will provide coverage in this matter, provide coverage in the Sloan case, and allow 267 and all of those subsequent enactments and contractual modifications to take place. There's nothing that needs to occur here besides simply upholding all of that binding case law from then. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. Mr. Turley.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Anthony Turley. I'm here today as amicus curiae on behalf of the Ohio Academy of Trial Lawyers. I'd like to follow Mr. Henneman's comments about this beautiful courtroom. It's my first opportunity also. It really is a fabulous place. You did a nice job putting this together, whoever it was that did it. I would like to first address the question presented by Justice Lundberg-Stratton about this right being statutorily created. It is correct that the two-year guarantee period was a statutory right, but it's also correct that that statutory right was specifically and explicitly directed at a contract right. Contract rights are the quintessential subject of unconstitutional retroactive application of statutory law. Once a contract has been entered, the law as stated at the time that the contract was entered is the law that applies to that contract without regard to later statutory amendments that may affect what the previous right may have been. When Mrs. Lapius purchased this policy on October 1, 1999, she did so understanding law that said she had 2 years in which she could rely on the terms of her policy not being in any way restricted from what they had been at the point that the policy was issued on that date. I'd then like to turn to Justice O'Connor's question about the payment issue. I would disagree that payment as such has anything to do with the term. The term of the policy is set forth in almost all policies in the declaration pages of the policy. Now, it may be the case that the payment corresponds to those stated dates of applicability or those stated dates of coverage, but I don't think that the payment is necessarily indicative of what the term of the policy is. Without regard to how the policy is paid for, the issue is, what did the policy say? But in this case, not only what did the policy say, but what did the statute say? And turning then to that issue, there are two things that Mr. Henteman said at the beginning of his presentation that forced the conclusion that the 8th District must be affirmed here. Mr. Henneman said that before Senate Bill 267, quote unquote, nobody could change the policy without written consent for 2 years. And secondarily, quote, the two-year guarantee period had not lapsed yet. That means that as of the date of this incident, the policy must have remained on the terms that it was under at the time that the policy was issued on October 1 of 1999. Secondly, I'd like to talk about the unconstitutional application of Senate Bill 267 were this court to agree with the position advocated by Motorist Mutual. This court has historically said that there's a two-step process in determining whether a statute has any sort of retroactive and therefore possibly unconstitutional retroactive application. The first step in the process is to determine whether the statute includes an express statement of an intent to apply retroactively. I would say that that statement is correct in most cases, but as this court has recognized in other contexts, and as the Supreme Court of the United States has said repeatedly, a statute can be unconstitutional both facially and as applied. This happens to be an excellent case of an example where reversing the 8th District and adopting the position advocated by Motorist Mutual would be an unconstitutional retroactive application of Senate Bill 267 as applied. It is true, everyone agrees, Senate Bill 267 did not include an express statement of retroactivity. However, the only way for Senate Bill 267 to cut off the right here would be to apply it in an unconstitutional manner. And that goes back to the point about the two-year guarantee period having to do with a contract. Mrs. Lapius purchased a contract at a time that she understood she had 2 years during which the terms of the policy could not be reduced except with her written consent. It would be illogical and unfair to say that a statute can be applied retrospectively merely because it doesn't include any statement of explicit retroactivity. And therefore, I think it would be unfair and unnecessary to apply that to the statute in that manner here.
Mr. Turley, let me ask you, you're representing the Academy. Do you know of any reason to dispute the statement of your co-counsel that there are only two cases pending, that this is not really a case that's going to affect many people or companies.
No, Your Honor, I appreciate you bringing up that point. I do not know of any specific reason to dispute it. I might refine the statement a bit. There are two appellate cases that we know about. I don't know how many cases may or may not be in the trial courts. I would interestingly point out that it may be affected by this court's decision on Sarmiento, which was argued this morning with regard to minors. I don't know that would be the case. But I don't know that there are a significant number of cases, and I think that the presumption would have to be that there are extremely few, given the fact that we're now in 2005. Senate Bill 267 took effect in September of 2000. Most policies are issued for either 6 months or a year. Senate Bill 267 says that all statutory changes can be incorporated into the statute. So I think it's fair to say that there are very few cases. So the implication of your question may be, why does the Ohio Academy of Trial Lawyers care about this case? I'd like to address that. The reason is that adopting the position argued by Mr. Henteman, despite his fabulous baritone, by the way, he really should have called Cleveland Indians baseball games as far as I'm concerned, but accepting the position advocated by Motorist Mutual would be extremely bad precedent with regard to retroactive application of statutory law. We appreciate that there are very few cases, but we think that it would be very bad law to say it's okay to apply a statute retrospectively merely because it does not include an express statement of retroactivity. And then lastly...
You've used your time.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Henteman, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I would just like to close by commenting upon Section 5 of Senate Bill 267, which makes it clear as to what the legislative intent is with respect to the amendments of 3937-31E. It is the intent, this is a quote from the uncodified law, the sections that are part of the statute. It is the intent of the General Assembly in amending Section 3937-31 of the revised code to make it clear that an insurer may modify the terms and conditions of an automobile insurance policy to incorporate changes that are permitted or required by that section and other sections of the revised code at the beginning of any policy period. And the intent is clear.
Well, counsel, I don't think your opponents are even disputing that. They agree that's what the statute is intended to do and in fact does do. So well, there's really no argument about that.
Okay. Then the question is whether or not if you apply the law, the facts of the loss to Senate Bill 267 as it applies to the Motorist Mutual policy, then the judgment of the trial court should be reversed.
Because there is an argument about that.
Yeah.
Does this case have the far-ranging consequences, the public interest that we're concerned about in rendering our decisions? Or is this just factually driven, only affecting a couple of cases, as counsel suggests?
You know, but they all point to the fact that they're protected because of the fact that for that two-year period there can't be any changes made. That's contrary to what 267 says. But there's a downside, as I mentioned. In fact, one of the cases that is out there deals with whether or not the fact that the insured could not benefit from the change because they're locked into the two-year period. So, I mean, it goes both ways. I think I have nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Henteman. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.